Hey everyone, welcome. I'll officially name it. It is training call number six, Anger and Healthy Aggression Part Two. Are we already on a rest week next week? I think we are. And then the following week, Seth is going to be actually joining y'all for a training call. I will be playing hooky, if you know what that means still. And I won't be here. He'll be guiding the seventh training call on healthy and toxic shame. Dun dun dun. Yes, there is a healthy shame. There is a toxic shame. This was one of the topics that Seth will probably talk about. He disagreed with for ages. And you might as well, because when we've grown up with toxic shame, it is next to impossible at the beginning to understand that there's a healthy version. So I'll just plant that seed. For those who've been around for a while, you know this. For those who are new here, you know, it makes sense if it doesn't make sense, and it eventually makes sense as we start to understand the importance of teaching humans of all ages, but you know, that toddler age, but also adults and teens, right from wrong. If we don't learn right from wrong, it can be a bit of a mess, right? So that ability to have healthy boundaries with connection is very important. So that'll be the training call, next training call. Today I'm going to get into the second part of anger and healthy aggression. Got my hand out here. Not going to start with some quotes. But I first asked for those here on the recording, I asked in the chat, and I'll read out some things. What are people integrating? I'm going to speak a little bit about integration at the beginning. I won't be able to read all of these, but I'll read some. Okay, so expressing very old childhood anger. Great, so that's an expression, which is awesome. And what's interesting is integrating is a little different than emoting. And I'll get into this as we get into the call today. Simply releasing an emotion, very important. Shaking out an old traumatic shock response, very important. Following impulse would be something that we start at the beginning of our journey here. But what would make following impulse? I'm going to quiz everyone here. What would make it such that following impulse has been integrated? Have a think, and I'm going to have a sip of coffee. How would you know that following impulse has started to become integrated? Let's see. Cindy says, oh, now they're going to go quick. Noticing it throughout the day and acting on it. It's automatic. You got it. Listening to my body first rather than my head. Yes. I'm going to be even pickier and go one step forward further and say you're not even aware that you're listening. You're just in it. You're integrating it. Now, with humans, we're a little different. My very descript example of this, if we think about our natural needs of urination, right? Having bowel movements, passing gas. Has anybody been to a dairy farm or at a ranch and you got your cows? They're not thinking, oof, I'm feeling the need to let out my bladder. They're not thinking, oh, I've got to let out a bunch of poop. It just comes out, and it comes out quite big, right? Because they're really big mammals, right? I grew up around dairy farms, so I saw that from a very young age. Same with our animals. But the thing that's interesting is domestic animals, they learn different things. Kitties, felines are interesting to me because even a kitten knows very quickly to go to the litter box. Usually, if you've seen that, and you don't really need to teach them, but it's that looking for something to dig, right? And covering it up. So I use that as a very descriptive way of expressing or getting you to think about integration from a point of view of how is it just naturally starting to happen in your life? Someone mentioned potent posture, right? When you're learning it through my audio and you're moving. And you could even do that as you listen to me now in your chair, checking in with your posture. Are you leaning more to one side? Nothing wrong with leaning to a side. You're on a bus or on a plane and you've got someone really squished next to you, you're probably gonna squish away from them, move away, right? If you've got the aisle or the window seat, you're gonna lean against that. You're not going to perfect your posture in that moment, right? However, if you've got this ability to have this natural dialogue in your system, you'll be like, oh, you're just going to shift automatically. If you have the opportunity to watch a toddler play, they do this naturally. They'll not like how they're sitting. Has any parent seen this with their children? And then they just change, or they've got something on them and they'll just rip it off. Right? Right? They just do that. I'll use animals again. Little fly is buzzing the back of an animal, their tail will just whip it away, right? Get away. They're not thinking that. So one of the most important things as we kind of move towards the tail end of this first 12 weeks for some of you is starting to notice those little glimpses when you go, oof, I just did that spontaneously. I remember talking to one of your peers ages ago, and she remembers telling me she was brushing her teeth at the end of the day. And before she realized it, she was feeling her feet on the ground without thinking about it. Right? So, this integration is important. So, I just want you to start thinking, get the wheels turning in your brain as to what you're noticing. When you go to bed at night, are you feeling the bed under you differently? Can you feel the pressures? When you're driving, if you drive, are you able to sense your legs as active participants of that car with awareness? Are you being more careful at orienting when you cross the street and really listening, really looking? When a little child is learning how to cross the street, what does mom and do, we hope, say when you cross the street? What's more important than hold my hand? Look both ways. And then eventually we hope that becomes second nature. All right. Yeah, someone said without thinking anymore, more regulated. Yes. It becomes automatic. Yeah. So anger is an interesting one. So there was a purpose for starting with this one. Anger is an interesting one because anger is essential. It is one of the primal mammalian emotions. Anger, along with joy or happiness, fear, sadness, disgust, surprise, and anger. And we'll get into the handout in a second, but just take a second because I got you thinking a little bit more, sensing. Let your eyes, let your attention maybe take a break from the computer for a second. See if your body has zoomed in. Is it worried about what's happening in the chat? Let that be. If you're finding yourself multitasking, can you let that be? Of course, if you're driving and listening to this, keep multitasking. Pay more attention to driving. Notice where your feet might be. I'll do the same. Notice where your pelvis is. I'm purposely slowing down a little bit. It's not because I'm at a loss for words. I'm just purposely pausing. Just sensing the energy. I'm also going to look around a little. We'll just, be a little bored together for a moment. If you find that in just sitting here, there's this itch, this desire to grab something, to do something. Just notice that. Give yourself a second. If you're sitting with another person, I see some people with others. Can you sense them, but also sense you as separate? Can you notice what's happening in your mouth? Is your mouth open? Is it closed? Is there anything holding, any tension in the area around your mouth or face? Does it require any touch? Does it require a movement? Does it require a sigh or a wiggle? This is the one thing that you have to start holding is sitting and just following your impulse and noticing the basics. I could make you hundreds and hundreds of minutes of audios every week, but that will not teach you how to do it on your own. So, how can you start to think about, and some of you do this already, I have no doubt, having moments in your day. You don't have to be sitting, you don't have to be lying down, it doesn't have to be perfect. It could be in the laundry room before you move the wet clothes over to the dryer. Yeah? That's when you integrate this. It doesn't have to be sacred and perfect. If anything, make it the opposite. I know that might come as a shock to some, but take the sacredness out of it. It's just learning how to be present in your own space and notice how your physiology is. And it doesn't mean that you wouldn't maybe sit and have a more dedicated time to pray, right? If you pray, if you meditate, if you have altars and you do ceremony, all of that is wonderful. But this is biological, this ability to just be present. It's one of the reasons why so many humans struggle to find their intuition when they're raising, say, their children, their babies, when they're just talking to the person on the street. How can we make it simple? So with that, as we move through the handout today and the learning, just and I'll remind y'all and I'll give myself a moment to take a pause. Just this ability to recycle your attention to these basics is incredible. It's that those are the ABCs. Yeah, if we think about learning the language, a new language, those are the ABCs. We could say those are the 1, 2, 3s. The next time you're in a lineup, can you just stand there? I know how tempting it is to answer some emails. I know how tempting it is to check things, be entertained. I do it. It's okay. Right? But can you do half and half? or for a moment before you pull out that thing that we call a phone device, take a second to just sense and ask, do I really need to look at this? I'll end this little intro with a funny story. I remember listening to a comedian once, and she was talking about how she only checks her email once a day, which I still can't fathom. But she only checks it once a day. And she said, imagine if you went to your post office box. Remember the old-fashioned ones that you went to like get stuff out of for those that have to walk to a mailbox? Imagine if you did that every 5 minutes or every hour. That would be a bit weird. You might get a lot of walking in, but that would be a little neurotic, right? Now, it's a little different than the mail. If you run a business online, as say I do, and many of you do, or you're in a job where you need to check emails, I get it's a little different. But something to consider, these little things. So, review. But to the handout, anger is medicine and additional resources. We've got a few additional resources on the site. Seth has some audio or visuals that he's done, making faces and growling. It's all on the site. There's a beautiful video that is of a wedding. Did anybody see the wedding where they're doing the haka? The Maori, I'm going to say ritual, and not versed in all the elements of it, but it's a beautiful example of healthy aggression and connection and emotion. I find it very hard to watch that and not tear up because it's just got so much life force energy, and it's equal amongst the men and the females and the males. So this is where at the biological root, anger and healthy aggression is not a male thing. It's not a female thing. It's just a thing that animals, mammals have, and we need it for protection. So, first line here. Why is working, of course, this is my questioning, something to think about. Why is working with the emotion anger and developing healthy, that's the word, healthy aggression, why is it one of the toughest things to unwrap? Because it really is. Why do you think it's one of the toughest things to unwrap? My personal sense, this is my opinion, but it's also based on a lot of experience. We're trying to teach and learn something that we rarely see modeled in a positive, powerful, that's the word, powerful way. Yeah, someone says culture here. We're working on it as a human species, and some areas are doing better than others. Some areas are getting this really wrong with big cathartic expression and what you might even say expressions that are verging on overactivated overriding, where you get your baseball bat out at that workshop and hit the pillow or hit the big bean bag. I'm sure some people here have been to some of these workshops, maybe in the 90s, maybe in the 80s, maybe not too recently. I think that world is slowly starting to move. But the thing is that sometimes we do need to get that bat and hit the bean bag when it's a natural need to get that hitting response out. Does that make sense? So sometimes me saying, got one of my SPT students here, Lisa. Hey, Lisa. If I were to say to Lisa, hey, you say you've got some anger stuff, here's a wrench. And I want you to hold that wrench and beat this pot and pan just to get it out. She'd be like, but I don't want to do, I want my feet to do the movement. You know, but if she doesn't know that, she's going to go, okay, I'll take that wrench and bash this thing to get my anger out, to get my rage out. But her body might need to kick. It might need to stomp, right? So we can't say what a person needs. And this is really important, obviously, for all of us. When you're working with yourself and you're feeling that impulse, and this is what I connected on the first handout, I know it feels like a long time ago, the first training call for anger and healthy aggression. Do you remember I had that phase one and phase two? You feel the internal, right? And then you need to match it with the somatic expression. It could be a sound, right? It could be a hiss. It could be a growl. It could be a word that you never got to say really loudly and really forcefully. So, okay, let's keep going here. So again, like I said, it's my sense that we're just not used to seeing it in a positive way. We'll get into that. All right. And yeah, if we can keep the chat quiet as we go through some of these quotes so that you really take in some of these quotes that I'm going to read, that would be awesome. So, expression and containment versus explosion and violence. I think we're more used to seeing explosion and violence, right? Whether it's through war or through movies or through the bar fight when people have had too much to drink, right? Road rage. I'm sure we've all seen this, whether in real life or in viewing things. But then we have expression and containment, and they're very different. Now, this is a wonderful quote, it's really a paragraph from a book called The Essential Edgar Cayce. Some of you know I'm a big fan of this old healing prophet. He died a long time ago. He was practicing holistic practices in the early 1900s. And so Mark Thurston studies him, and this is a portion from one of his books. So Mark writes, and he quotes a bit of Cayce. So have a listen and feel free to read out loud with me if you've got your hand out. So anger is an emotion directly related to saying no. If you haven't said no recently, sometimes it can feel good to just say no out loud, saying no. Of course, he, in this case, Edgar Cayce, isn't saying we need to run around blowing our stacks every day, but he did emphasize the need to express anger in the right way. And then he quotes Cayce, and Cayce was incredibly Christian and, so this is why the wording gets a little more like from the Bible. He says, "Be angry, but sin not. Be angry, but sin not. For he that never is angry is worth little." But then Cayce adds how important it is to have a container for that anger. And then he quotes Cayce again, "But he that is angry and controlleth is not it. Sorry, I'll say that again. But he that is angry and controlleth it not is worthless." Right? So harsh words. He's being very direct. You know, this was back in the day where we didn't keep things PC. But it's like if we're angry and we don't control it, if we destroy our home, if we're angry and we hit our kid, we kick our dog. We're mean at the cashier because they're not getting the change right. This happened to me the other day. It's like you don't want to swallow it, but you want to feel it. This is where back to the feet, back to your breath. Are you holding and clenching your gut? And then Thurston says, note here that the control does not mean suppression. The control does not mean suppression, but proper direction. It's a crucial distinction. I just love this passage because it really, even back then, he understood that the human needs to get that energy out, but you don't want it to be violent and you don't want to be explosive, but you got to process it. And this is the crux of humans, is we're still learning that distinction. Right, we're still learning that distinction. And then this is from Peter Levine. So in the nervous system and somatic experiencing worlds, Peter Levine explains titration. So now I'm dipping in titration here, this ability to do little bits and little bits and little bits. And this is from Peter's book In an Unspoken Voice. So he writes, we, meaning those in the SE world, Use titration to create increasing stability of resilience and organization. Think back to the swimming pool, beach ball analogy. So those are my words. Titration, back to Peter, is about carefully touching into the smallest drop of survival-based arousal. I'm going to say that one more time. Titration is about carefully touching into the smallest drop of survival-based arousal and other difficult sensations to prevent re-traumatization. I use the term titration to denote the gradual, stepwise process of trauma renegotiation. So I'm going to unpack that in a second here. Pause. See where you are in your body. See if you've been a bit too locked into the cognitive. See if there is something that activated a little with either of these quotes. So, part of our work in SBSM, or all of it really, if I'm honest, is building capacity. It's about skills, it's about learning how to notice the things that you're learning. And there's a lot of things you're learning, whether it's your kidneys, your adrenals. Some of you will have gotten into the layers of the body, the diaphragms, the joints, so many things. This is all a tapestry, if you will, to build up the resilience of what you're noticing and to know that those things are even there to pay attention to. But eventually, the work we want it to become, and it says it in this Peter Levine quote, we need to start touching into the survival arousals, the old fight, flight, freeze, and shutdown responses. We have to remember the bad thing that happened to us. We have to feel the shutdown with consciousness. This is what happened when I went into that surgery and I was terrified. This is what happened right before I blacked out. This was the poor choice I made right before I was blah, 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 blah. This is the time that I shouldn't have done that to my kid, but I did because I didn't know how to contain my anger. We're going to have to feel into those difficult things. But everything we're doing is leading up to that ability to touch into these small little bits and know that we have a lifeboat there. Right, that we're anchored, and that's what all the preparation and all the foundations have been in the whole SBSM curriculum. So eventually we need to work with these traumas. Some of you will be able to navigate some of these old events on your own, and sometimes you might need to find a practitioner, maybe a therapist who's familiar with somatic processing. Maybe it's a yoga therapist. Maybe it's a craniosacral therapist. Maybe it's a massage therapist who's open to you feeling and emoting a little bit when you're having your shoulder worked on because you broke it, right? Again, everyone's going to be different. So, what I will say is sometimes it does help to have a witness and someone there. And depending on what occurred and the severity of things, sometimes you can navigate a lot on your own. Make sense? Sounds simple in practice, I know. But this is where you want to give yourself the benefit of the doubt, so to speak, and be like, I think I can feel into this. This goes back to the second training call. I'm quizzing you all. The whole idea of the four whens, when not to orient, when to orient, when not to have a deep breath, when to resource, when not to resource. There comes a time where we might have to stop resourcing. Yeah? And we might need to dip into that pool of survival stress that has been sitting there kind of frozen and not attended to. So let's go to page two. So this is a continuation on titration. And titration is just a fancy word. So if you look that up online, it's kind of taken from organic chemistry, and it's where you have, the chemist's crazy lab, and you've got the little glass things, and you've got things dropping into other things, and things are heating up, and you don't want to put too much stuff, I'm really simplifying this, into one container because it might do what? Boom. It might blow up. All you have to do is take some baking soda and vinegar. If you've never done that as a kid, it's kind of fun as an adult. You put them together, right? If you just put vinegar in a cup of baking soda and you don't have enough of a container, it's going to bubble out. It's like if you shake a carbonated drink and you open the lid too quick. But you can shake that thing. I'm sure we've all done this. And what do? Just a little. You little let a little steam out, and then it dissipates it. If you were to take that same baking soda and dissolve it in some water, and then put the vinegar in, there just might be the tiniest little fizzle, right? So that is a visual of how we want to slowly titrate into these survival pieces. Whereas that cathartic baseball bat expression, when we haven't done the foundation work and it's not a natural organic expression of, I want a baseball bat, right? The funny thing with the baseball bat is that we didn't have baseball bats back in primitive time. Maybe a rock would be a bit better, right? Those sorts of things. It's funny that we choose these things. But I think the movies have trained us. You got that baseball bat in the kitchen, and it's just waiting for the assailant to come in. All right, so back to the handout. Titration and practice. So first line, when we're practicing, experimenting, and living, that is the word, living. Living. We want to navigate our experiences so that sensations and activations, that's the next word, arousal, stimuli, stress, settle on a case-by-case basis. In other words, don't flood, that's the word, flood the system. I'm going to speak in a moment to what happens when we might flood the system. So, when starting out, when our capacity, that's the word, capacity is smaller, we want to aim to not let out too much energy all at once. Energy is the word. We don't want to put too much energy out. It's like if you don't have a lot of energy in your body to go on that 6-hour hike and you do it anyway, you're going to crash, right? If you don't have enough fuel, enough hydration, you're going to feel it. Next line, we want to titrate. So there's the word, titrate our experiences and experiment as much as we can. So this comes back to, so I'll talk in a second about when we do too much, but this is where I bring in that good old-fashioned stubbing the toe on the door or coffee table analogy, something some of us have done. So has anybody, since we've started this round of SPSM, hurt themselves in a minor way? Like you've banged your elbow on something, or you've burned your finger, or you've tripped and kind of knocked something, you've bruised something, and you've taken the time to feel it, as I have suggested. Has anybody done that? Right? It's a big owie, and your mind goes, oh, this is a perfect time to practice pain, being in pain. Every moment you do that, it comes back to these first few lines on this page. That is an experiment. That is an experience to teach your body, I can handle this sensation. I can feel these crazy tears coming out, even though I just broke a glass I don't really care about. Right? But it's connecting to something probably from the past, maybe, where something bad happened and you didn't get a chance to cry because you had the parents saying, don't cry, or nobody was there to witness your tears, for example, right? So this is how we build up experiences. That's why I have the word experiment. We don't want to go hurting ourselves to see how we recover. We don't want that. But when those opportunities arise, it's a great way to be curious and go, oof, damn, I feel that pain and I'm going to feel my feet, et cetera, et cetera. Someone said, wanted to get this question in the chat. Where did it go? Someone asked, what if it comes up naturally in tidal waves and you can't titrate? Yes. So, great question. So, what I think this person is asking is a memory, let's say, with a bunch of sensations comes up and it's really big. Sometimes we don't want to titrate. And this is where, when you learn complex systems, there's one way and then there's the other way that you can't predict. So, if you've got the capacity and you know you can feel your feet and you know where you are and you know your name is what it is and it's this day, and you don't literally sit there and go, okay, my name is Irene, it's April 28th, but there's like this conscious knowing that you're present and you feel this big memory and you can hold it, then go with that tidal wave. So we, if we're always titrating, we'll never get that big boulder out of the swimming pool. So this is the part that takes time to understand. Depending on your system and where you at, you might need to almost force yourself to titrate. Maybe you've got a chronic illness, right? Maybe you just don't have the energy. And you're actually going to consciously, I'm just going to do a little bit. I'm just going to do a little bit. But there's a catch to this, a catch 22. Sometimes that big boulder has to come out to free up the space so the immune system can heal that chronic illness. You see what I just said there? So, like, this is where you have to make kind of a judgment call. I really need to get, I need to feel this memory and I am going to cry and grieve and snot is going to be all over my face and I need to rip tape paper towels apart and just get the stuff out. But the key is that you're still feeling the ground as you're ripping the paper towels apart and as you've got the snot all over your face. You see? So, a big, big expression is perfectly fine. The key is, are you staying present? Can you name the day? Do you know where you are? When we go into those things and we don't have the capacity, this is where capacity comes in, that is where we dissociate. That's where we come out of these things and we look a little glassy-eyed. Okay. I'm just gonna give you an example. There was something, this is only gonna make sense if those of you follow social media, but I'll explain it. There's a very famous singer. Her name is Leanne Rimes. There was these videos going around where she was being myofascially released by a guy. I can't remember his name. Not important, but he has a huge following, and I don't agree with what they do on this channel. And she had this massive something release. I don't really know what occurred. It looked like it was the hip flexor. I can't remember. But she stood up and there was cries. And then her eyes, it looked like she was going under anesthesia. They just went glassy. And she went, whoa, I feel a little dizzy. And at that moment, I was like, she's dissociated. Yes, she's emoted. Yes, there was a big red face and crying. But afterwards, it was clear she wasn't present. Does that make sense? So she had such a huge release and it looks really amazing. And there were the tears, and she's kind of funny. So she's saying the funny things for the camera. But then you look at her eyes and they just, It's like the baby that went viral on social where the dad was oming to it. I've talked about this, where this baby, this little young, she was not even a month old, was crying. And the dad, big guy, omed to this little sweet little one. And she stopped crying instantly. But if you look at her face, her eyes go glassy and then she shuts up. What's wrong with that? He's not connecting to her. He's not listening to what she needs. Yes, that sound is going to vibrate so hard that she's going to go into a shutdown response, right? If you've ever been on a road and you feel a big semi coming behind you, it's a big roar. It goes through your body, right? So you've got this little tiny one who doesn't know how to co-regulate, how to self-regulate, I should say. She's looking for dad to soothe and calm with gentleness, and he gives her this fire hydrant sound. And of course, everybody thinks this is brilliant because he just got the baby to stop crying. I share these examples because that is a great example of how strong the nervous system physiology is to protect. Right? Now, you're learning how to VOO and do sounds in SPSM, but you're adults, very different. You're not a little tiny baby that's completely helpless, right? You can sense when that's enough, you can stop. She can't say to the dad, stop. It's impossible. So, that is a couple examples to describe titration in relationship to how big we can handle things, and everyone is different. The more capacity you have, the more one can say rock and roll energy you've got to like go through those things and like get through those emotions, those memories. But at the beginning, little bits are better. And then every now and again, you're going to have to experiment and kind of let the horses out of the gate, so to speak, right? Let them run and see what it feels like. And then you're like, I know I'm giving a lot of double metaphors, but then it's like, oof, let's pull back those reins. That's enough. Right? Let's whew, calm it down, feel the ground, etc. All right. So here's a note on babies. Still page two here. Babies have this innate capacity in them to titrate. They really do. So again, this is in context with a caregiver who's listening. So they might start to fuss. Let's say you're holding little baby, look away, or they stop engaging. You know, they look away when they've had enough. That's the word, enough. It's like we're having fun. You know, we're playing little sounds, blah blah blah, and then it's just so exquisite. They look away. That's the cue. And as the caregiver, you got to go. Whoa, cool. They just respected their impulses, their boundaries. And I'm just going to let them look away. I'm going to wait and be bored. And eventually they'll come back to you, or it'll look like they need to sleep, or they'll fuss because they need food, or whatever it might be. Right? Or they're looking away because they're having a bowel movement. They're feeling their guts move and they have to focus and feel it. So, another hallmark of attunement, that's the word, attunement, is being able to recognize this as the caregiver and support their natural rhythm of approach and avoidance. Right? This is actually a very natural instinct. I could give you lots of examples, but animals are a good one, right? They see something, what do they do? They smell. Oof. Or if they like it, they eat it. If it's not good, ugh, yuck, they go away, right? They approach, they avoid. We're the same. So again, that's part of the impulse that we're building. What do I like? What do I not like? With kids, it's also really interesting because you probably don't remember when you were little. But this is where, again, just a tidbit for the parents. This is where you got to be really neutral with food. If you don't like something, Maybe because you were told that's yucky, whatever. Be very cautious about how you have energy around giving different foods to your children, right? Let it be neutral. Let them explore all the different colors of the rainbow of vegetables and proteins and fats and even treats, right? And they will, they've shown this, toddlers will go for healthy food when given lots of different choices. They know what's good. So, all right, so our birthright, healthy aggression and the energy of the emotion anger. So we're really speaking a lot about little people right now, and there's a reason for that. Because our healthy aggression is born into us when we're infants, and how we were related to will determine whether or not we were met when we started to pull and grab. So we'll get into this. So the first line, it's a kind of a quote, that's mine, right? That little person grabs the thing, this is mine. I want it. And like there's this look on the face, like, this is something that's not important, but I'm going to protect it to death because I don't know any different, right? But that is them claiming space. This is mine. And then you might say, share. They don't understand that. It's like, no, right? And then how you navigate that, of course, is dependent on many things. So the other baby, so this again is all information that I've learned through Peter Levine. Whenever he teaches about healthy aggression, always matches, it always matches with what we would call depression. I'll explain that in a second in life force. So there's an age when the little one, let's say little one is feeding, it could be breastfeeding, it could be bottle, or you're holding. And I mean, I've got long hair. This is a little different if you've got shorter hair, but the baby will start tugging on the hair. The baby will start scratching. They'll start biting. They'll do little things. That isn't them trying to be a monster. That's them feeling their sympathetic fight, flight, healthy aggression energy. They're feeling their power. They've never known what it's like to grip strong, right? So at that moment, what we want to do, if it hurts, because it might, we don't want to say that hurts necessarily with a voice of you're being bad, but it's like, oh, wow, look at how strong you are. That's what we would want to say. Look at how strong you are. Look at those little hands. They're just so strong. And if it's hurting you, you take their hand and you play. You play, and then you let them feel the strength with your hands. And you have an interaction. So again, we've got the little punches, the mini fists. This is more of a toddler thing. The toddler's roaming around, and the dog's got this real attractive tail, and you pull the tail or you pull the cat's tail. And often, fortunately, if that dog bites or the cat bites, it's then the animal's fault. But that animal is just minding its own business, right? And so in those moments, that's where the healthy shame has to come out. And again, Seth will talk about this in 2 weeks, where there has to be a strong no, bad, right? With connection. Otherwise, they'll go back and they'll pull that tail again and they'll get in trouble. Just like they'll touch the hot stove again if there isn't enough of that strong voice that goes no. Now you see what I just said there. If you're connecting it to the oming, remember I said that om, that's voice is deep. This is again where you have to modulate. If you just fire hydrant that om out at the little kid, they will shut down. In those interactions and connections where toddler is doing something wrong, you do need to have that no with connection. And it has to be enough to give a little bit of a fear response into that child. But it's with connection and it's with care. And then they feel in their body, oof, don't touch that tail. They connect that fear response because that is dangerous. That's how you learn wrong, right from wrong. So that's just a little preview for the toxic, healthy shame. but it connects with the healthy aggression, right? Now, if you have siblings that are beating each other up, that is different than the baby tugging on the mother's hair, right? And that's where then there's a different element and a different level of sophistication where it's like, why are they beating each other up? I understand if I just understand there's sometimes instances where that's just what kids do, but what's going on that's making them want to be violent with each other? Very different than rough and tumble play fight, right? That ability to say, okay, stop, 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 just like when you're being tickled. Tickling is fun until it's not. And when you say stop, or the child says stop, you gotta stop, right? And then it's fun as opposed to terrifying. All right, page three. So here are some examples of the beginning energies of healthy aggression and life force energy being felt and expressed. So I've already kind of warmed you up to these, so we'll move through these. And just notice what you notice as I go through these, because this is going to definitely be felt by some of you a bit more than others, depending on how you were raised. So then the first thing, if the mom doesn't know, and it doesn't have to be the mother, but typically mama's energy is the important one, typically, not always. You know, if we think about animals in the wild, those brand new cubs walking down our street in a little bit are not with the papa, they're with the mother, right? The mother is the main provider with little ones, typically. So if the mom doesn't know how to meet, that's the word meet, that energy, and again, this is that big energy of baby, right? Pulling, arms getting strong. So if she doesn't know how to meet that energy in a caring and inviting, attuned, and encouraging way, the baby won't feel met and she'll sense unsafety. This is how it starts. That very beginning, I feel this strength in my arms, little, 6-month-old baby says, and I want to use it, and then I have the person who's caring for me smacking me and saying stop or putting me down, right? That doesn't feel good. But of course, baby isn't thinking that. They're sensing it in their body. Next line. Without consistent safety, you get the slow decline. That's the word decline of life force energy and expression. So this is where the shutdown comes in. The shutdown. The biological message is that of no acceptance. I'm not accepted. I'm not worthy. I'm not deserving. And when a person doesn't accept you, and in this case, that person is the primary caregiver, especially your primary caregiver, you don't accept yourself. That can sting when you really understand that. When there wasn't that early acceptance, when you weren't honored. And let's face it, humans are in a weird place right now because we now know this stuff intellectually. We know that this isn't good for babies. And yet, most of us, many of us, are here because we didn't have that. So we're all kind of in the same boat in a sense, some of us more than others, but this has just been how it's occurred. And there's been research, the research that was done back in the day where they deprived babies of touch, ethically you couldn't do that anymore. These are studies that really showed what occurs, the distress that occurs to an infant when they're met with no emotion. They feel the distress. There are classic experiments called the still face experiment. You look it up online, it's just shocking that they did this. It wasn't too long ago, but the mother was there with the baby and she just nothing. Her job was to sit across from her baby with no affect. And then eventually they're like, okay, you can pick up the baby. But you see instantly the distress Imagine a baby that doesn't have that attunement for an entire first 3 years of their life. They eventually learn to not emote. That's how we create a situation where humans don't feel, they don't have empathy, or they have confusion with their experiences inside. So, next line, that energy of non-acceptance. So again, this is baby is wanting to play, got all this energy, and the caregiver doesn't have, maybe they want to, but they don't have the energy, or they don't realize they should play with their baby. This was another thing that was really taught to caregivers back in the day. It's like, don't play with your baby. Like, they need to be alone to learn self-regulation. This was taught for decades and decades and decades. So we're trying to undo that, but that energy of non-acceptance turns inwards. That's the word, inwards, to low self-esteem. Self-hate and shame. This would be that toxic shame, and like I said, more on that soon. But this is why Peter Levine connects life force energy and this infancy importance of aggression, life force with depression. When you don't get that good connection, it isn't just gentle attunement, it's also that animal self in the infant needs to be played with. They need to be responded to, right? They need to get that energy out. If there isn't a meeting, it's confusing. And then that's where we go into that collapse and shutdown. Therefore, next line. To reaccess, there's good news. That's why we're here, right? We can gain back that energy. We can gain back our healthy aggression. It takes time. But to reaccess the true self, that's the word self, one must tap into their healthy aggression. Healthy aggression and wake up the life force energy that was shut down due to basic survival. That's the word, survival responses so long ago. So, funny enough, titration works in reverse. Every drop of that moment, every moment that you weren't met, every moment that you wanted to play and you were told not now, or every moment, this is when you're a little older, you've got a silly song that you want to perform before dinner, and you're told no later, and then later never happens, right? You create art that makes no sense, and the parent says, that doesn't look like anything. What is that? Worst thing you can say to a little human creating. If it doesn't look like anything, you ask them, what is that? That looks really interesting. Tell me what you made there, right? That's how we foster that creation, that creativity, that expression, that life force energy. So, the next three lines here. So, this comes into I'm going to talk about the practices. So, it's like, how the heck do we start to open that up? And some of the lessons, the VU sound, the VUA sound, are in service of that. So, first line, the lesson of making sound, so that's the word sound, via the VU. Feel free to play with me and say it, the VU. I always think of the ABBA song, Voulez-vous, for those that remember ABBA, VU, or VUA. Ah means you open that jaw up, and ah gets that healthy aggression, or at least the structures of what would be needed if you were to bite, ha, right? Take a bite out of something, ah, show the teeth, ah, right? So these sounds, they're to help spark up life force energy. That's the word, two words, life force energy in small titrated pieces. So, if we're here and we are, and I just did those sounds, and if there's a little bit of you, because I can't see all of you, but you're shy to even play with that, ha, that's an indication that there's something in the system that isn't so sure about making these expressions, and that's okay, right? Even if I were to, and I'll do this, I'll bare my teeth and go, Kh. If you see that and there's a little bit of a shock, again, that's okay, but that shows, okay, there's something in the system, your system, that has a little uncertainty about healthy life force. And so play with that. It's something to play with. And of course, that's what we guide you through in those lessons. If you're in a partnership with another human being, this stuff can be fun. It's a good way to set a boundary, right? Ugh, little growl, little snarl. I don't like that, right? These are the things that, oddly, in a healthy human relationship, sometimes words aren't enough. Seth and I growl at each other all the time, but we also laugh and have fun all the time, right? We'll say, I don't like that, or I need you to do this. And he might go, Hur. It's like, because he's tired and he doesn't want to do it. But it's a way of not saying, I'm not doing it, but he's expressing, I'm tired. I don't want to do that. So there'll be a little growl. Like, these are the things that you integrate when you get this really into the language as a second language into the body. So, next line. If the vu, it, the vu ah, or the vu, helps to mobilize, that's the word, it mobilizes that deep, visceral, biological, cellular knowing that you, I, matter. And that you deserve to be alive. That's the word, alive. That idea, I am alive and I'm here, could be monumental for some of you. It's maybe never even been considered. I'm just going to pause on that one. Right? When we had to live in a shutdown and a freezy state most of our life, I've talked about this a couple training calls ago, where I talked about this ability to feel aliveness. I connected it with, why do some people take their lives? Why does that happen? If you're really alive, if you're really connected to your body, very hard to take your life. And people might say, oh, but that person was so vibrant. They were so good with their kids. They were in the community. You can look really good and vibrant and do a lot, but be shut down, right? So this ability to mobilize this energy, this vu, that deep belly feel, and be like, I'm alive, is really important when we know we've had a lot of shutdown growing up. The reason why we do the vu first before the ah, why do you think I just don't say go ah like you're at the dentist? When you do the vu first, it connects deep in the gut first, so it grounds you. If we want to talk about the chakras, we can, the root, the sacral, the solar plexus. Doesn't mean we have to, but it's a sequential, titrated way to come up. So you've set the foundation in that woo, that deep, and then ah, right? Animals in the wild, that big bear that's roaring, they're already connected to their gut. There's no reason to not be connected to the gut for them, right? So that's why we prime that in the human, the cultured human, as we are. So, final note there on page three. This is very different from acting out, that's the word, and watching a movie that might spark up or produce aggressive reactions and feeling of adrenaline, right? So, I love me a good action movie, I'll admit. I like the action movies, but that isn't going to help me process stored anger from the day before that I suppressed. It's fun and it might match what I need to get out, but that's a very different experience. Okay. Yeah, someone, I'll just answer this. Someone said, Jasneet said, I thought people who take their lives, it has to do with intense stress and struggle. Definitely, but there's a lot of us that have intense struggle and pain, and we don't, right? Again, I don't want to speak to this at length, but humans can endure a lot and persevere and keep going. And I do think that there's something going on where the system is incredibly shut down and not feeling anything, right? So I think mo a lot of you here know how much pain you can feel and struggle and in heartache and intensity and grieving. But it's that f when you're really feeling it, you're in your body, you're very much in a state of like, I'm here and I'm alive and I want to stay alive, even though it's really difficult, right? I wouldn't say that this is an exact science, but that's my experience in following this and knowing folks who have taken their life. And I'm sure there are many of you here who know people who have, right? So it's a sad part of humanity that we feel that we got to do that. So let's go to page four. Got two more pages. I'm going to have a sip of liquid. Tune into your systems, see what's going on. And, just a little to shift the subject into some visuals, the VUA, to go back to that, in being fortunate enough to spend as much time I have in classes with Peter Levine when he was really teaching. He would do a lot of demonstrations with people from the public, right? So you'd have a big class of, gosh, sometimes 80 people, and a brave soul would come in to work with him for an hour. And after, he would say hello and get the person to see the or the people in the stage or in the audience, which is always one way to see, can this person orient? Do they have the capacity to look and see the audience, or is it like they don't want to look? He'll inevitably, not always, but I would say 85% of the time, he would have them start with the VU. He would show it. He would do it first so they could hear it. And my sense is he does that so that he sees what the person responds to. How do they respond when they even hear this sound? And people either got interested, oh, what's that? Why is this master practitioner making a foghorn sound? This seems silly. Or a person will hear it. Remember what I talked about, approach avoidance? They'll kind of get a little scared of it. And then that's one way of assessing where that individual is in their capacity for intensity. You see? And then he might get them to play and do it with him. He would always do it with them, but he's never going to say, hey, breathe deeper and get a bigger sound out. You see? That's why this connects to breath work, making all the connections today. You can't force someone to produce a sound. Well, you can, but it's not going to match with their physiological capacity. And if you override their capacity for breathing and expanding the lungs, right? This is why we work with the diaphragms. This is why you guys work with the breath, with the con inhale, exhale lessons. It's opening everything up. So when you do get to that VU sound, there's a little more space to resonate in the chambers from the pelvis all the way up to the head and the eyes. So it's a very sneaky way, I think, of him to bring a sound and an exercise, something that's a little playful, to assess where is this human at? What can I work with? And then that is where a person goes, okay, now I'm going to do this or that. Now, again, don't just take this example as something that you always do if you work with clients, but it is one way to kind of see where someone is at. I also think he's only got an hour with the person. You can only do so much in an hour. No miracles are going to happen in an hour, but a little bit of titration, a little bit of work can go a long way. So, page four, top of the page. So, cathartic practices tend to tap into this kind of only outward expression. So this is back to, the baseball bat, the primal screaming, that sort of stuff. Because it needs to come again. This comes back to handout number one, feeling it in the inside. That heat, that irritation, that frustration. Frustration is on the spectrum of anger, it's just a little less. Has anybody here found, as they've been doing this work the last little bit, that they're a little more pissed off at th certain things? That you're just a little more frustrated, a little more irritated? That's very natural and normal. Now, you don't want to just stay in that state of frustration and irritation, because then you'll just be frustrated and irritated all the time. But that's the system opening up. And eventually it's like, okay, what has to come out that is old that needs to be expressed? And that's why, again, it's not enough to just hit something. You need to find out, oh, I'm frustrated because, yeah, I wanted to be expressive when I was young and I had to go and just do academics. It's one example. There's certain cultures that prize the academics, right? Can't be an artist, can't be a chef. One of my favorite shows is Chef's Table on Netflix. If you want something inspiring to really see human culture and conditioning, it's a great show. It's a great show. Yeah, very good show. So, onward. So, the tricky, sticky nature of anger and healthy aggression work. It is tricky and it is sticky. Because you've got to find this in your own system, and you also have to want to open up your life force energy. If you are starting, I'm gonna say this before I get into this. This is sort of a disclaimer. If you are starting to open up your aggression, your irritation, you're starting to set boundaries, but you're in an abusive relationship or a toxic relationship, you have to be careful, because if the people in your home have no clue about growling or about setting a boundary, that puts you at risk. I'm going to be really open about that. And this is where you have to use your higher human brain. Okay, I'm still living with mom and dad. I'm not going to go tell them to fuck off. That should have happened at age 13. I'm serious. They won't understand if they haven't been doing their own work. Now, if the parent is in SBSM with you and doing it, which probably is not likely, let's be honest, and you just respect their, I'm living with them. That's where you do have to put the cultural respect on, and then go out with the friend that you have, or go do the thing that you do and get that out and elsewhere. Don't use the primary people who have abused you or are toxic to you as your practice ground. Now, you can set gentle boundaries, like, no, I'm gonna do that tomorrow or this, but do not bring this level of healthy aggression into an abusive or toxic relationship, because it just won't work. I'm being very kind of black and white with that, but I think some of you probably know that practicing some of this with your good old parents or your siblings or, a coworker who's pissing you off might not be the best idea. So you got to pick your battles, right? If you've got little kids, however, this is great. Be an animal with them. Growl. Like the lions and the tigers, get on all fours and crawl, be animals, right? They love that. And it's good for us too, right? So again, you've got to have context. And anyone who's lived for a long time in an abusive relationship knows you kind of have to be in a bit of a survival mode. Because if you are too expressive, you risk harming, getting harmed, right? So just be smart with this. And this hopefully will lead you to find better relationships and get out of the ones that aren't good for you. All right, so first line there. It can be tough It can be tough to imagine a lifetime, that's the word, of stored up anger and aggression coming out in one big bang, right? We don't want that. This is why some people who go into intensive retreats, and it can be either a Vipassana meditation where you're being forced to be introspective for 10 days, or it could be a big plant medicine ceremony where you take a heroic dose of something and everything in the stars opens up in one bit and you can't process it. So we don't want to try to do this all in one moment. Next line. So a person will stop. A person will stop their aggressive impulses and even just the feeling. That's the word of the anger energy, as they feel, sense, think it might harm others. So this is a fine line because I've sat in enough sessions in private practice where I have encouraged my clients to stomp their feet a little or do a little sound, and they'll say, "I don't want to hurt you, Irene." And then I have to say, "I'm cool. If it's too much, I'll let you know." Right? If it's too much, I'll let you know. I have to say it's okay, just like that mother would have hopefully we want to say, "Ah, you're playing with my hair. Let's play with your hands. Let's do a tug of war with your hands." Right? I wouldn't even say that's too much. That's too much. I would just take the hand and play with the hand and say, "Well, look at your strength," right? So it's very important. Again, this is for maybe those who are practitioners here, it's okay if someone says, "Oh, I can't do that." You don't want to say, "Yeah, you can." You want to say, "Okay, well, let's just try something smaller," right? And then this is the titration, because you don't want to put a person into shutdown. Next line. And or, so this is kind of a big run-on sentence, and or a person might stop and not allow themselves to feel it. That is the anger, the sensation, because it was unsafe, because it was unsafe to express it in the past. Or the expression of anger they knew from the family system was explosive, abusive, and terrifying. So, again, this is why, back to the first question I had at the front of this handout, why is this such a tricky thing to work with? Because we have so many varieties of how we were raised. And even in the same family system, siblings might get different energy based on economics, what was going on in those parents' lives at the time, right? So if we've seen so much violence that it was terrifying, we might not even want to consider what it's like to set a boundary. The flip side is we were brought up in violence and all we do is violence. Right? We continue on that trajectory of what we saw, where we go the opposite way. So we're trying to find that sweet spot in the middle where we're not totally suppressing and we're not completely blowing up everything around us. Next line. There's often immense shame coupled with these powerful life force sensations and emotions. You could add in their toxic shame. So, again, if you think about that infant or that toddler who wanted to be expressive and then they were shut down, or maybe they were punished, or maybe they were left in their crib, that's going to hold a somatic imprint of whenever I'm myself, I am isolated. Or I am hurt. This is the I almost don't want to say this, but I will, because it came into my head when I follow my impulse. You know, the classic timeouts that got popular a little while ago with kids. You're going to have a timeout and go into your room and be alone or sit on the stairs. I witnessed this with some of my friends, and it was just so sad. That's not good. It's disconnecting the kid, right? For whatever reason, they've had an expression of activation. They don't know how to contain it because they're four or three or two. That is where connection is important, not isolation. This is something that Gabor Maté talks about a lot. Maybe you sit with the little one and are with them, but you don't leave them alone. Because again, if you look at that little one, they'll either rage or they'll drop into a shame. I've been shunned away from the family system. I must be bad. I'm bad, as opposed to I don't know what happened. I just had a lot of energy and all of a sudden I'm alone. Right? And so this is where, as adults, and that generation of kids is getting older now. Who knows what's going to happen? But yeah, we want to know that we might start feeling energy that's healthy. And sometimes we'll then swing to, I just did something bad. I just expressed myself with this expression, and now I feel like I need to collapse and hide. That doesn't mean you've done it wrong. That means you've tapped into probably a very early, early impulse where you expressed and then you were told stop, or you were ignored, for example, right? So this is how these things kind of trickle up and out, and they're all very normal. This is all normal stuff, unfortunately. So again, bottom of page four. So another commonality. This is just different scenarios. Again, it's not textbook, but it's some of the ideas. If we had zero, so having zero model for any kind of life force expression, meaning the environment was devoid of all emotion, shut down, and any sign of warmth or affection was the rule. Okay. A great case study in this, I'm going to forget the name, but it was depicted in the movie The King's Speech. Someone might know that history better than me. But if you actually look at, someone can maybe tell me who that person was. It was Colin Firth, I think, who played it was the actor. If you, I brought this up when I was doing training the other year. He had a stutter and he learned how to speak, but he was a sick kid. He had bowel problems, high levels of anxiety. He fit the classic chronic illness situation. And my sense is it had to do with, of course, that high level affluence, but also the devoid warmth of royalty. You know, you children should be seen and not heard. You can't hug mummy. Like all these things, like very, very strict, strict, strict. King George, thank you. Oh, I just got shivers, right? So again, you look at the history of some of these stories and it connects with this zero warmth, no affection, no model of life force energy. That's why we all loved Princess Diana, right? She was a little different, apparently, you know, just she had that different warmth, right? So, hence titration, hence titration. That's why we need to titrate this stuff. If we did not see any affection and love, we need to be careful with, not careful, but slow with it. This is why some of us will get into a good relationship. Has anybody done this to themselves? They've actually been in a really good relationship that's warm and of connection and goodness, and then you sabotage it. You break up with that person. You can't handle the connection and attunement. And it makes sense. If you didn't get used to, if you were not used to that, it will be very, very difficult. Thanks for the his story. Someone said his nanny abused him. Yes. Yes. So yeah, it's a really interesting, there's so many movies I think in my head. If we were to take some of these pictures and then show the trauma elements of it would be a really huge way to teach the public, this is why that stutter happened, right? This is why that little baby was sickly. All right. Final page, exploring healthy aggression. So, a little lesson review. Now, I'm going to go through these fairly quickly. Please know that these are just ideas, and each person is going to have to find how they emit and emote and open up their life force energy. This is why I don't love giving visuals, because the way I make my face and the way my sound comes out is very different than yours, right? And so this is where you have to be creative, be a little quirky, experiment, feel. So, top of the page, anger is often associated with tension in the body, tension in the body and its musculature system for the most part. So, when we're storing up anger, right, the jaw can be tight, these upper shoulder muscles called the traps can be tight, the neck, right, all these upper quadrants of our musculature that give us openness can get really, really tense. The opposite to that is collapse, right? There's no structure, there's no integrity to that. Sometimes, so next line, sometimes we need to create. Create is the word, safe, aggressive experiments to help free up stored aggression and anger. So these experiments are essentially what you're playing with the voo-ah. One of the lessons with anger and healthy aggression, don't skip it because it's an article. It's one of Seth's articles on freeing up aggression, where he, does anybody seen the t heard the towel, right? He talks about getting a towel. And we do it, like for those of us that wash up at the end of the night and you get your washcloth and you squeeze the water out of it. That's a great way to feel, oh, there are my paws, my claws. Growl a little as you squeeze that, right? When you move doors, when you push things, if you're picking up a heavy thing, like grunt a little, like with these things that you move, and it doesn't have to be, I'm working with healthy aggression, but like, see, oh, I can move this and make a sound. Actually, when you make that sound, it helps free up the belly, right? It lets your belly relax. That's why big weightlifters, they make sounds when they lift weight. It's to help the flow through the diaphragm to keep the breath going. So we can experiment. These are experiments for helping free up the energy. They're not limited to, though. So accessing the jaw and the facial muscles. So often when we say the jaw, we just call this all the jaw, but it's all of the face, really. It's the eyes, right? It's the mouth, it's the teeth, the scalp. We want to have, open and flowing. The scalp can get very tight when we're holding in emotions. The voo-ah, the voo, subtle entry points to unlock healthy aggression, held aggressions. Even the hips. Right. So I'm obviously sitting on my pelvis. Remember the lesson connecting the head and the pelvis for those of you that done that Feldenkrais lesson? The hip joints and the jaw and osteopathy are completely connected. Right. When a mama is having a hard time pushing that baby out, one way to help open up the hips is to relax the jaw. That's why she needs to scream. That's why she needs to make funny sounds. It opens up that chain. So when you're doing these movements and you're playing with the jaw, be aware of your pelvis. Be aware of how it can also be free to move because everything is connected, right? Pelvis goes to the sacrum, goes to the spine, goes to the top of the spine, allows us to move. So it all connects. As Peter Levine ha said in class once, the jaw is the linchpin to anger. Linchpin is just a fancy word for it's the thing. We need to be able to have expression in the jaw to access our healthy aggression because it's primal, right? It's related to the mouth, it's related to the teeth, it's related to the growl, the roar, the bite, the hiss. So, doing the voo and the voo-ah with movements, that's the word of the hands, feet, pelvis, eyes, whatever the impulse brings. If I just sit here and do this, voo, Ooh. Good. Some of you are laughing. I'm being really silly. It's not the same as ooh, right? Feel it in yourself if you want. Play with it after. You got to connect the whole parts. It's the whole painting, not just one quadrant. Snarling the lip, right? That baring the teeth, biting, growling, hissing. Some animals hiss. If you've ever tried to get near a mother goose when she's got her little goslings, they're about to come out right now in spring here. I've experimented. She doesn't bark because she's a goose. She hisses, right? So every animal is a little different in how they make sounds to ward off predators. These things, I already said that this is actually a very powerful connection with the jaw, these hands of ours, right? Right? We use our hands for writing and typing, but they also are protective. Right? They grab what we want, but they push away what we don't want. Pushing with the, oh, I already said it. Pushing with the hands, flailing the arms, right? Stomping the feet. No. Also is good to feel the skeleton that way. Here are my feet, right? Jumping. Movements to hit, punch, scratch. This is actually very primal in working with folks who have had abusers and attackers. A lot of it is this frenzied movement of the arms, right? It isn't this perfect vu-ah, right? Vu-ah again is an entryway. You're not going to say vu-ah if someone is attacking you. You could try, right? You are going to push, you are going to scrap, you are going to, as we would say, scream bloody murder. So, if you are someone who knows that you need to heal and move out these aggressions from, say, an attack, you need to be aware that this might come out in a big sound. It might even look violent. That's okay. Remember what I said? We want to make sure that we are connected to the here and now and that we're not hurting ourselves or other people. That is the key. But what we let out can be incredibly intense, and we want it to hit that intensity to match the intensity that got stored in our system when we weren't able to protect. Right? So we can control this now, but when we hit that organic, natural release, watch out, right? That's again why you want to be somewhere safe. You want to be with a person who isn't going to say, you've got to stop that. You're going to hurt yourself. I have released some pretty strong things from my past surgeries. And if someone were looking from this on the outside, they would have tried to restrain me and stop me because it looked like I was going to hurt myself. But never once have I injured myself when releasing the shakings from my hips and knees and shoulders and head from all the concussions and all the injuries. That's what I'm saying. When it's natural and you've built up the capacity, the system is actually able to hold that energy and move it out. But this is also why you don't want to go in prematurely and mimic what you see on a YouTube video, for example, right? So the human system is really intelligent. The medicine in it can be really big. And we don't want it to be painful. So if we're working with joints and that are sore right now, then your job, this goes back to what we talked about on the first few training calls, when to work with shock trauma, when to work with early trauma, right? We need to be like, I'm in a season right now of building up resilience and capacity in my body. It's not about the big releases right now. I need to get my joints healthy. I need to get my spine healthier. I need to get my aerobic capacity up. You need aerobic capacity to release for minutes on end because you don't want to collapse with fatigue after this. If you release these kind of energies, you want to actually feel reinvigorated afterwards. You want to feel good energy. So again, this could be a good question for the training or the Q&A calls, but I'm here to answer it. If you know that it hurts to move your joints because of, say, something autoimmune or chronic fatigue, work on the diaphragms, work on the joints, work on the gentle head and pelvis movements, work on following your impulse, work on the basics. Eventually, this will come up and out. Someone said, does silent screaming help? It can. If you can scream into a pillow, better. But yeah, someone said they went into the bathroom and screamed. My sense is if you've got kids and people in the house, you don't want to scare them. That's a thing. A car is really good. When you're in a parking lot and there's nothing around, a car is a great place to let out a scream. I know that that might not always magically be there, but also driving on the freeway and you've got some loud music playing and it's fairly safe and you're contained, just a little screams. That's another good way. Yeah, the cat doesn't like the voo. Yes. Animals tend to not like the voo and the voo-ah. They'll look at you and they'll often run off. I've seen that with our cats in the past. So yeah, don't tease them with that too much. All right, friends, I've gone a little over. Few stories today. Be gentle with yourself. Again, this is all in service of ideas, experiments, theory. You have to find the integration point for you. You've got the power, right, to know and to sit and to listen and to keep working on certain things. So just be very gentle, be curious, and take a break from the computer for a bit once we hang up. Thanks, Leah and Susan, for being here live. And we will see you all not next week, not next week, but the next week. Seth will see you for the training call in 2 weeks. Bye, everyone.